Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults. Y'all going to say it?
And beer.
Hell yeah.
I was a little late.
Yeah, you were.
Anyway, as you can hear and as you can see, there's another slideshow if you're watching on YouTube. That's because Paul's not here. And my fill-in tonight, they don't have video capabilities. It's another slideshow, but hey, slideshows are fun. I put a lot of work into those.
Yay. We appreciate that.
So, joining me because Paul is out of town. He will be back next week for the start of the, I just had a total brain fart. Willie Picton. Yeah, he'll be back for that one because I'm not gonna split up a multi-part episode between different people. So, Paul will be back next week, and hopefully he won't have to take any more time off. But if he does, that's fine. He's a busy man. He has another podcast of his own. And speaking of other podcasts, I have guests with me. They're from the Mom's Wine and True Crime podcast, Jess and Chris. Hello.
Hi guys.
So tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, so we are two of your everyday moms, and I know everybody says that just to sound relatable, but we truly are just two moms trying our best to navigate all the challenges that life and parenthood throws at us. We originally bonded over parenthood, but realized we also bonded over a love for true crime. So Chris said, let's start a true crime podcast. I laughed at first, but here we are. So we definitely aren't just talking about true crime. We also talk about the ups and downs and all the funny stories about being parents and wives. And we always let you know what we're drinking while we're doing it.
Nice.
That's right. So like Jess said, we really are just like your average moms trying to raise good humans without losing who we are along the way as women. So we felt like starting our own podcast would be fun and something that we could do just strictly for ourselves. We have met some really great people along the way, and it's amazing to see how quickly it's growing. Like, we're still really, really new with all of this. I think we recorded our 12th episode this past week, so we're really new, but it's been fun.
We're excited to be here tonight.
It was like the highlight of when I was looking for a fill-in
for Paul. I'm just like, okay, and I'm going over Instagram and everything. I'm just like, okay, Mom's Wine and True Crime. Okay, we have yet to have an alcohol themed name, so
yeah, that's awesome.
Even though I don't drink anymore.
When Chris told me your name, I thought it was just perfect. So matches up with us well.
So
we like to review a new wine or like alcoholic beverage every week while we record our podcast, and so we're always taking recommendations for that too. So if anybody has a recommendation, you know, send it our way.
Even your favorite beer, why not?
Bud Light.
Okay, easy enough.
Anybody,
summer here. I'm down.
Anybody that's been listening to CKCB for a long time knows that my go-to was always Bud Light. So
if I feel like a beer at a bar, I'd probably order a Bud Light. So I'm down with that.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
So Mom's Wine and True Crime, check them out anywhere you get your podcast, and we're going to give them a round of applause. You two, like, you know, you're both mothers. You talk about motherhood issues. I have a mother. I'm not a mother. But I have.
But you're a parent.
Yeah, apparently. I have a, you know, an issue that I'm dealing with. Why is it that 14-year-old girls don't? Yeah, it's like getting them to clean their room. You would think you'd be getting them to like cut an ear off or something.
Oh. My 14-year-old, I mean, I have a 14-year-old son, not a daughter, but similar. I mean, it's like I ruined his life when I asked him to do the dishes or, you know, pick up the dog poop. But anyways, I get it.
And I have a daughter, and she's only 10, but I can relate too. Like, you ask her to clean her room, and it takes her, like, 17 hours. Yeah. You know, but, like, we just posted something on our Instagram this past Easter saying, like, you know, give kids an Easter egg hunt and they'll find 5,000 Easter eggs in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
But ask them to clean their rooms.
Oh.
And it's going to take them seven hours. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So.
That's true.
Substitute hours for months.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Well, just tell them they can't play Fortnite and they're on it. Yeah.
Or go fishing or hang out with their friends.
Anyway, I don't know. But I do have some ado. There's something I have to address. Time suck. The time suck with Dan Cummins, one of the top dog podcasts out there for true crime. Yeah, you know, he is where I want to be.
Okay.
That makes us, you know, his podcast. He's also a stand-up comic, but his podcast right now pays his bills, and that's where I want to be.
Wow.
On April Fool's Day, he did an episode that was fake. He did a fake true crime case. He made it up.
What?
And it was great. Oh. It was great how he did it. And at the end of the episode, he's like, has that ever been done on a true crime podcast before? And the answer to that is, yes, I did it last year.
Did you?
Yes, episode 50.
Oh, no way.
The Dust Bowl Killer episode. That.
How creative.
So I sent him a.
Kudos to both of you.
I sent him an email saying, you asked if it has happened before. Yes, it has. I did it last year. I gave a synopsis of the story, and I also posted a link. I'm saying, here it is if you feel inclined to listen. I said, but well done, by the way. And he sent me an email back. Thanks for listening. Glad you enjoyed it. Didn't say anything about what I had said about my podcast and the fact that.
Oh, my God.
That sounds very generic.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. But I did it first, and he kind of went overboard. Like, somebody spoiled it for me. You know, it's like, oh, you know, Dan did a fake episode for April Fool's Day. But the thing is, so I knew it going in, but still, because of the fact that I had done it last year, I would have listened to that episode, because he kind of went overboard on some things. I would have been like, okay, all right, it's April 1st. Yeah, he's...
Oh, okay.
I would have known.
Even if it hadn't been spoiled for me. Kind of like in... kind of like in the Force Awakens Star Wars movie, some asshole, you know, made a post online saying that Han Solo got killed. But still, when I watched the movie, even I knew when it was coming, not because of him, but I was just like, okay, this isn't going to end well. So I would have seen it coming anyway before. So it's the same thing with this. But he did a really good job. He did a really good job with it. Mine's a little more ominous.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, the Dust Bowl Killer.
So what episode number is that? Because I want to hear 50. Yours.
Okay.
But
I just had
11,
50. just listen to them all. I mean, I took out the original BTK episodes, so, yeah, those are long gone. Oh. So so pretty much everything. You know, some of the earlier episodes are kind of dry. They're kind of, but yeah, the original BTK episodes, they're gone. So, listen, I'm happy with all of them. There's a couple there. There's kind of but the original BTK episodes, they're gone.
Okay.
Anyway, I have no more ado. Do you?
No, we don't have beef with anybody right now.
Oh, I do. Isn't just beef. Anything else you want to say before we jump into the episode?
can we tell people where to find us?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can find us at Mom's Wine and True Crime on Instagram. Give us a follow there. You can email us at momswineandtruecrime@outlook.com. And Jess, you have some news.
Facebook?
Yeah, girl.
I created a Facebook today. Yeah. I did.
Finally, we have a Facebook.
Oh, really?
So we're everywhere, guys. We're everywhere.
Nice.
So we're not big social media people. So this, like, I don't even have any. So this was a big deal for us to, like, even start this podcast and have social media. So Jess made us a social media account on Facebook today, and it is...
I'll link it.
Wine and True Crime.
I'll link it in the notes. I'll link all your stuff in the notes.
Awesome.
So.
Thank you.
But besides that, I don't think...
I think we're good to go.
All right.
Yeah, we're not mad at anybody.
No.
No, Adu's not. I'm not even mad at Dan Cummins.
I know.
He said it was a good episode.
And he said, did anybody do this before?
Yeah, he asked.
As if it was his idea.
Right.
It was not his idea.
Well, we have proof. Right? We have proof that it was done before.
The OG.
Yep.
That's
so we're continuing the Canada binge. You can't say that we've been neglecting Canada anymore, because
that's right.
You know, there's five stories in this Canada binge.
And I think we forgot to mention that Jess and I are from Canada.
Oh, exactly. Did we? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did forget to mention that.
So we're your Canadian girls.
Covering a Canadian case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Covering a Canadian case, eh?
With a guy from Florida, eh?
Yeah.
I don't say A, by the way.
I do all the time.
You do. You
yeah,
do.
You're
you
like
do.
So
I'm too
Americanized.
Americanized
by now.
I know.
Not
I know.
Even fair. Mm-hmm.
We're covering Jennifer
that was good.
Pan. Jennifer Pan. Mm-hmm. She's special.
In her own way. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a case where it's just like, yeah, it's just like you feel sorry for her, but there's better ways to handle things.
Exactly.
You know, another Canadian podcast is called A Million Other Choices. She had a million other choices.
Exactly.
So, but November 8, 2010, 911 got a frantic call from a woman claiming that there had been a robbery that had turned into a hostage situation that then turned into a murder scene. And the call came from the affluent Toronto suburb, Markham. Is that close to you, far from you, what?
So Markham, Ontario is about 4-ish hours away from us.
Yep. Toronto and area. Yeah.
Yeah. So Toronto area does get like a bad rap. It is kind of more of a lots of crime. More so crime. It is a very big city. Markham's about, like, yeah, half an hour away from Toronto. It's more like a suburb area. Mm-hmm. Real safe. During the time of this crime, Markham had only experienced 6 home invasions that year. And that's not a lot for that area. That's not a lot.
That's not even a lot for a small town.
It's pretty safe.
You know, really, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the caller, Jennifer Pan, 24-year-old daughter of Huey Han and Bick Ha Pan. And Bick is spelled B-I-C-H, but it's pronounced Bick like the lighter.
Yes.
Yeah, but I watched the documentary where they were calling her bitch. Like,
oh,
really?
Get out.
Oh, rude.
And I don't even think they did it on purpose.
Fair.
It was just, you know, but I laughed at it because I looked it up. I looked up the pronunciation. It's Bick like the lighter.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
yep.
right.
So. But she said that people had broken in, shot both of her parents, tied her up, and the thought was that initially that some underworld figure had set their sights on the Pan family's wealth, which they didn't have any. They were well off, but they weren't, like, wealthy. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, they both drove really nice cars. They had for the time, a relatively decent
They're upper middle class.
Account.
Exactly.
Upper middle class.
Yeah. Nice house,
yeah.
You know. Yeah.
But
I mean, were they
You're
rich?
Not going to
no.
hold them hostage.
A lot of upper middle class people don't have shitloads of money in savings.
That's right.
You know, So, I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, they live good, but they, if something happened, they don't have anything to fall back on because of how they're living.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Robbing these people and holding people hostage, that don't make sense.
Right. Right.
But initially they figured that was the motivating factor. But as the police investigated, a more twisted plot came to light, and it turns out that Jennifer had orchestrated the hit after years and years of lies and deception. It's a crazy story that once again proves that criminals aren't as bright as they think that they are. And this one's on the crazy level of our Dahlia Dipolito episode. And if you haven't heard that one, you should check it out. Yeah, check that one out too. I don't know the episode number. It's fairly recent because Paul's on it. But
okay, awesome.
Okay.
But yeah, although this case has a death in it, unlike the Dahlia case.
Okay.
The sources that I used are Killer on the Line Doc Season 1, Episode 4. That's what I was talking about, where they were calling her bitch.
Okay, gotcha.
And I used all that is interesting.com, and I used a little bit of Wiki. Jennifer's parents were educated in Vietnam, and they moved to Canada in 1979. They had two kids, Jennifer and Felix, in 1986 and 1989, and this is literally the last time you're going to hear Felix's name in this episode. unless y'all bring it in later, unless yeah, but because y'all are
I might towards the
y'all
end.
Oh, will
you? Okay.
Because y'all already covered Maybe. Y'all already covered this case, so
mm-hmm. We did cover this case. I think this is our maybe fourth case that
Chris Chris researched it, mm-hmm. so she definitely knows like every detail. I was just there to listen and drink my wine and.
Well, I liked your episode. I listened to it. Yeah, I listened to it after I had finished my notes. So.
I re-listened to it today and like, oh wow, her audio is real bad.
Don't worry about it.
We need to upgrade.
Yeah, I know.
Don't worry about it. You're still rookies.
We're new. It all comes.
And, you know.
Don't judge us.
You know, but anyway, but the names Jennifer and Felix, those names tell me that they were trying to assimilate at least a little bit. But her father, Han, he kept the ultra strict and conservative honor bound mindset, which plays a part in the chain of events.
Right.
Han was described by one of Jennifer's friends as a classic tiger dad, and Bick was just a reluctant accomplice, and she was also a subject of Han's iron fist as well. And, of course, Jennifer and Felix. But it seemed like Jennifer got more of it than Felix did.
Yeah, probably. I think that has a lot to do with
the eldest and the girl.
The fact that Felix was older, he was a boy. Mm-hmm. Jennifer was younger, and being a female for sure. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk a whole lot about tiger parenting in our episode, just because I didn't want a whole lot of backlash about, you know, discussing another type of parenting, but
I'm not.
It's real strict. Real strict.
Well, we kind of get into it as far as, you know, a little bit. I mean, I'm not, you have different cultures and everything, you know, I mean.
Exactly. And at the time of our research, it was the first time I've heard of tiger parenting. So I only knew,
I just thought it was a metaphor that she came up with off of her ass.
Oh,
no.
It was the definition and everything.
Yeah. But I would say that Jennifer's mom was also a tiger parent. I don't think that she wasn't as bad as the dad was, but she's definitely accountable for being a tiger parent as well. Hmm. But like in the most respectful way, because, you know, where do you draw the line? We're really protective parents, Jess and I, as well. So, you know, even in our episode, we did talk about how we can relate to their type of parenting, even though it's a little bit more extreme.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say there's extremes.
We still relate.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely an extreme, yeah.
So, but Jennifer was closer with her mother than she was with her father, Han, obviously.
Right.
And whatever she did was not good enough for Han. And they had found work at a Magna International, which was a car parts plant, and they were frugal, and they were able to buy their house in Markham. Yeah, and Markham also has a high Asian population.
Yeah.
It's very culturally diverse, yeah, for sure.
Han and Vic had Vic.
Close.
Yeah, Han was married to a former dog abusing NFL quarterback. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Exactly.
Han and Vic had very high expectations of their kids, and they kept them busy. Jennifer was taking piano lessons by age 4, and shortly later, figure skating. Those classes, as well as school, took up all of her time, and you know. But Jennifer enjoyed the figure skating, and she was really good at piano. It didn't really say whether it specified that she enjoyed the figure skating. It didn't say if she enjoyed the piano, although she later on she did become a teacher, so apparently she liked it somewhat. But
it was said too that Jennifer was trying to go to the Olympics with her figure skating. There was nights where she was there at a very young age until 10 o'clock at night practicing figure skating, and then she would go home and do homework until like midnight.
That makes me wonder, I mean, just all the horror stories that you hear about these young girls being trained in figure skating, it makes me wonder, yeah, if something happened to her.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not making any accusations, I'm just saying I wonder.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But wouldn't, yeah, surprise me. But yeah, part of me kind of feels bad for her, you know. But what she did, yeah, this just.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, this is
no excuses.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah,
hashtag,
there's a lot
we'll
of cases.
Get there.
Yeah, there's a lot of cases where you can feel bad for the person for sure, but I mean.
Well, like Carl Panzram.
Yeah.
He had a horrible childhood. And his adult life was, you know, there was only one outcome for him.
Mm-hmm.
Serial killer.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you feel bad for him, but once he crosses that line, okay, you're an asshole. You know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Because similar things can happen to a different person and they don't do that. So it's like, mm-hmm, you know, of course you feel bad for the child in them or whatever it may be, but...
Yeah. So, but she tore a ligament in her knee, so that kind of ended her dreams of becoming an Olympic figure skater. But she took up the flute and joined the marching band. Han's rules ruled Jennifer's life. They would pick Jennifer up as soon as school was out. They watched her progress in school like a hawk, and she wasn't allowed to date. She wasn't allowed to go to dances or anything that would take her mind away from school. And, you know, these oppressive and tyrannical rules wouldn't end when she turned 18. She was still living under Han's roof, so she had to abide by his rules. My roof, my rules. I don't think I said that right, but oh well.
My house, my
that's
roof.
It. Yep. That's it. That's
mm-hmm.
it. So,
I mean, kind of the same thing. My roof,
my
rules.
My rules, my rules. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So, when the crime happened, she was 24 years old and still being treated like a child and a prisoner, but that was kind of self-inflicted, which we will get to. By 22 years old, she had never even been to a party or even had a beer. Yeah, and she could only visit her friends if her parents were supervising, you know, helicopter parents of an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
And the fact that she never had a beer, too, like in Canada, the legal drinking age is 19. So the fact that by 22, you know, she was never able to experience that is, you know, kind of different than in the States. That might not seem as weird because the legal drinking age is 21. Whereas here it's
21 for the military, too. But you can join the military at 18. You're old enough to die for the military, but you're not old enough to have a beer before you do it.
Crazy.
That doesn't make sense
to
me.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I think they should at least do it to where they're allowed
to. For another
day. Allowed to do it on post. Yeah.
Yeah. While we all have a drink.
Yeah.
When she was in elementary school and middle school, she had great grades, but in high school, they dropped to the C range, and it was most likely due to burnout, to be honest with you.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean,
if she brought home any test grade lower than a 95, that was a failure as far as Han was concerned.
Oh, my gosh. Is that true?
Huh?
I actually did not know that.
Yeah. Lower than a 95, really, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, that's
a 95 is just like, boy. It's a 95, Dad. Well, you're slipping.
Wow.
So,
wow.
A 98, 99, a 95 is slipping.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Which, we'd throw a party if our kids had a 95.
No shit.
Yeah. Like, that's such a good grade.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
During the summer, Han would tutor her 3 years ahead of her grade in math. But, you know, she still did good in her music activities, which she loved. You know, the music was an escape for her, and I can relate to that. but as far as her parents were concerned, she was a straight-A student. But she was forging report cards.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about high school now.
Yeah.
Once she was in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, they started slipping when she got into high school. And when her dad started flipping out about bringing home a 95, that's when she came up with this idea about forging the report cards.
Of course. Of course she would.
And she was apparently pretty good at it.
And you would have to be pretty smart to figure out how to do that in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She'd also gotten a boyfriend when she was in 11th grade, Daniel Chi Kwong Wong, who we'll just refer to as Daniel for the rest of the episode, because I don't like butchering names.
Daniel is fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had been with him since high school, but she managed to keep it hidden from her parents. Jennifer and Daniel were in band together in high school, and one day Jennifer had an asthma attack and she couldn't breathe. Daniel was the knight in shining armor, and he swooped in. He found her struggling to breathe, and he coached her on breathing techniques and was able to help her get back to normal. You know, Jennifer, if you ask her, she saved his life, or he saved her life. and this was the pivot point in her life when she began to rebel. The pair clicked and became a couple, and they fell in love, and she was 16, he was 17. You know, that. When they met, and she kept Daniel a secret from her parents because, you know, she knew that her parents would never approve. And I also saw reports saying that, one of Daniel's parents was an American, was Caucasian. The other one was Asian.
No, so he was. Oh, what was he like? Half Chinese, half Vietnamese, or something like
half
that.
Breed.
And that was not. Yeah,
that was not cool.
Not according to Jennifer's parents.
Okay.
No.
Well, Han.
No, he wanted.
I have a feeling. Bick.
Yes, according to the dad,
Bick would have been okay with it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But this is also when her grades began to slip, and a B would be the end of the world as far as Han was concerned. And so, like I said, this is when she began forging the report cards, and they've. I already said this. They were apparently really good forgeries because her parents were none the wiser. She had been accepted to Ryerson University.
Work yeah, what me. Was it? Is that right?
Ryerson?
No, it was Ryerson.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Han was delighted. He's just like, oh, God, this was like the first time in Jennifer's life that Han showed her praise, and he even got her gifts, and she was off to Ryerson and staying with a friend close to campus, her friend Topaz. I'm just going to shut up about that. We'll get there.
Yeah.
As for her living arrangements, her parents had actually given her permission to stay with Topaz near the campus during the week. and then come home during the weekend. And in actuality, she was staying with Daniel at his parents' house, who, and Daniel had become a drug dealer as well as the manager of a pizza restaurant. You know,
yeah, and he was a pretty heavy drug dealer as well.
It was just pot.
But he was very well known. Like, right. That was like, if you wanted pot, that's who you went to.
But at the time it was illegal in Canada. I think it's legal there now, right?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very, very, very legal.
How many pot stores do we have in Amherstburg? We have a very small, like 13. We live in a small town.
Hey, you just said where we live.
Oh, well.
It's pretty much legal in most of the states in the United States.
We live in a very small town.
It's decriminalized in Florida, which means that if you get stopped with some on you, you're not going to go to jail. But
right.
But you can still, with that medical card, though, all you have to do is flash the medical card, mm-hmm. and you're good.
And it's really easy to get a medical card too. Mm-hmm. It's not hard. But yeah, in our small town, I think we have 1, 2, 3. We have for sure 4. And I mean, our town's like 3 blocks.
I can't get it. I have a CDL. So, nope.
What is that?
Commercial driver's license.
Oh.
Oh.
No weed for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's crazy.
I probably would do it if I could.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, at the time of this case, though, weed was not legal at the time.
Right.
And Daniel was very, very well known for dealing weed.
Okay.
And he, it's just like, I'm on the fence about him. It's just like, okay, so he's a weed dealer. So what? But he seems to be doing good by Jennifer. You know, he seems to be treating her good and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just like, and he's got a job and everything. He started as just a employee at the pizza restaurant, and then he wound up becoming a manager.
Exactly.
You know, he did that in a short time.
No, that's really
good.
And
he's a kid.
So,
yeah.
And he's still a teen.
So
yeah. No, in his 20s.
I'm on the fence about him, although later on he becomes a chucklehead later on. So.
I mean,
we'll get there.
What's the best kind of pizza in East Canada?
Oh, hey there. You like true crime stories, right? Yeah, I know. Who doesn't? But I gotta admit, after a while, all those stories of murder and heartache, well, they tend to go straight to my hips. So that's why I, Leroy Luna, have created a podcast called Excuse Me, That's Illegal, where we'll take a hardcore look at some softcore crimes. No TED Talks on Bundy here. The letters BTK won't be coming from these lips. Unless he had a brother that used to steal library books. Suppose I'd be willing to go balls deep into that one if that were the case. Anyways, you'll hear stories such as the Mad Pooper, a female jogger who wreaked havoc in a Colorado Springs neighborhood, using one family's front yard as her own personal dumping grounds. If this kind of content sounds like it's up your alley, Excuse Me, That's Illegal, is available right now on all your favorite podcatchers. So come join me. I'll be right here waiting for you.
So Windsor's actually very well known for its pizza.
Windsor is famous for pizza.
Yeah. Arcata is one of the best ones. I don't know, Jess, what do you think? Amalo's in Tecumseh is also really good. So, I mean, we have some really, really good pizza places here.
Like a ton.
In town, yeah.
So my favorite pizza, bar none, is genuine New York style, New York City pizza. I mean, that's good. Yeah, you have to fold it in half, and then the grease runs down your wrist.
Nice.
That's some good pizza.
Yeah, for sure.
Although, the first time I had the, you know, Chicago style, the deep dish and everything, you have to eat with a fork. I was like, the fuck is this?
I'm not big. I know. I had to try it once, but I'm not big on it. I wouldn't eat it again.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad, but I'm sorry. You know, I'm from Florida, so by definition, there's a rivalry between me and New York. But I love their pizza.
Okay. Well, I'm with you. I do like to fold the pizza. I like a little bit of a crispy crust, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. I like a thinner crust. Like, I like a regular crust. I don't like the Chicago style. I just don't.
We have a really good place in, like, our hometown where we live called Salty Dog. And they have real good pizza.
Well, they have a really, like, really a pizza oven. It's fire roasted.
Oh, yeah, it's a pizza oven.
Delicious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's handmade right in front of you. So good.
I just gave you crap for saying where we live, but yeah, I just gave it away.
There's a place in Florida called Salty Dog, but it's a surf shop. It's not a pizza place.
Oh, okay.
So we have two really good restaurants in town. One is called Salty Dog, and then the owners bought the building right next door and called it Pepper Cat.
Nice.
Salty Dog.
Flip it.
Pepper Cat.
That's cool. What does Pepper Cat serve? What does Pepper Cat serve?
It's very fine dining.
I didn't see that coming.
So Salty Dog's more like casual dining. Pepper Cat's more like wear your pretty dress.
Handmade cocktails, very fancy. It's very dark and dim in there. You can order a good steak.
I'm sure that somewhere in the United States there is a gentleman's establishment called Pepper Cat.
Well, maybe.
I would bet money on it. Somewhere.
Probably.
Somewhere.
Please let us know.
Oh, there's probably one right on Dale Mabry Boulevard in Tampa. And it's like, who needs Sodom and Gomorrah when you got Tampa?
A lot of advertising over here, I swear.
There's this street in Tampa. It's called Dale Mabry, either Avenue or Boulevard. I'm not sure. But, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium is on that street, but there's also at least 50 strip clubs there. At least.
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Downtown Windsor was real bad back in the day. A lot of strip clubs.
Like when we were younger, yeah.
No, but like even before, like Cheetahs and all that downtown was so, like there was a lot of strip clubs down there.
A lot of people came over.
Yeah, like a lot of, yeah, because we're right on the border, right? So a lot of American guys at 19 would come over to Canada, go to the strip clubs, drink downtown. Mm-hmm. Stephen Colbert shouted out Windsor on one of his episodes and said, Windsor is the asshole of Canada.
Yeah, we are.
So, bragging.
Well, we're hashtag, but I digress. But that's all right. That's part of CKCB. That's just what we do. But anyway, yeah, getting back to, and by the way, I've seen pictures of Jennifer. She wouldn't be working at any of these places.
No.
Like waiting for a reaction from Chris, and she just said,
"I was just watching you guys take a sip somehow."
Oh, because
Jess like snickered, like she was kind of trying to keep it bottled up a little bit, and Chris is just sitting there, just like,
"Sorry,
that's all right. That's all right." That's why people listen to this show. You never know what's going to happen.
I like it.
So, but anyway, the truth of the matter is that Jennifer had never even been accepted to Ryerson. She hadn't even graduated high school. She dropped out of high school, unbeknownst to her parents. And what, the phones not work in Canada? You would think that if she dropped out before she turned 18, they would have at least made a phone call or at least talked to a parent.
Yeah, that's really weird, eh? Mm-hmm.
That is definitely something that stumped us during, like, our research. Yeah, like, I know for a fact if our kids were flunking grade school, we would know.
Not only a phone call, we have an app.
Yeah. We have an app that, like, shows us their grades. It's a constant communication with all their teachers.
Yeah, and that's odd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're talking. You know, it's what year are we in? It's like what 2008? Yeah, no, we're in like 2006, but still, yeah. Okay, the apps weren't there yet, like they are now, mm-hmm. But still, email.
Yeah. It's still email, phone call, something,
yeah.
Right?
So that I was just like, what in the hell?
Yeah, that is strange.
And
I'm sure you're gonna get into this more though, but like she's super calculated. I'm sure, like she maybe erased voicemails or something.
Well,
like,
and
she's so calculated.
Were they very fluent? Like were they?
No.
Okay, so maybe they were just naive. Maybe she kind of. Mm-hmm. Informed them, you know.
Yeah.
You know, with what was.
Yeah, especially the mom. Her English, sadly, was not great. So
maybe they relied on her.
Call, mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah.
Who knows? Anyway, that is weird, for sure.
But you're right,
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. That was just like a head scratcher for me when I was putting my notes together. I was just like, what? Really? Like, I mean. If my daughter is 10 minutes late to school, I get a phone call.
You know.
Yes.
No, I get a phone call. I get a phone call. It's a record.
That's good, yeah.
This is a phone call from blankety blankety blank middle school. Your yeah. daughter, and then a different voice would say her name, was you know, was tardy today.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've gotten that phone call when she was like 3 minutes late. I know she was 3 minutes
really,
late because that was a day that it was raining and I dropped her off rather than her riding her bike. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Then later, you know, I dropped her off. She was like 3 minutes late and it was like right at 9 o'clock when I got there, but it was probably like 9:05 by the time she got to her class, you know?
Right.
And then, like an hour later, I get this phone call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just a head scratcher on what.
Yeah, that is weird. Was.
Yeah. But Jennifer had lied to everybody, telling them that she was at the university, but in reality, she was spending school time, you know, in libraries and cafes. She bought used textbooks and watched YouTube videos on the subjects that she was allegedly studying in college so that she would, you know, and she also had like notebooks full of notes that she took off of these YouTube videos and everything just to maintain the charade. Yeah, and in case somebody asked her, hey, what are you learning in whatever you're taking? She would, you know, be able to, like, throw something at them. Mm-hmm. So, in a sense, I mean, you can, if you've never played guitar before in your life, you could get on YouTube, and if you spend, like, 2 years on it, like, nonstop, like, practicing, like, maybe an hour a day, every day for 2 years, you will be a virtuoso in 2 years. I mean, so, that's not out of the realm of possibility for her to do that, even back then.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, she was learning. She, it's too bad that you can't get accredited from YouTube.
I know.
It is kind of crazy, though, like, when you think about how much time she spent putting into making these, like, false grades.
Yeah, just go to school.
Spending time in the library. Yeah, just go to school.
But the thing is, you know, any college that she went to, okay, Ryerson, that's an upper level college from my understanding. But even if she had gone to like a community college or whatever, that still cost money, which is something she didn't have.
True. She did fake scholarships, so she had fake scholarship letters, which is why her parents thought that they did not have to pay for any tuition or anything like that. It was because she was like, oh, look, Mom and Dad, I got a scholarship to Ryerson, and, you know, they're going to pay for a scholarship, when in fact it was not true.
Right.
So, but really, at the end of the day, if she would have just applied herself.
Yeah.
She's a real smart girl.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just.
Know, she can do all this. She could have applied herself.
She's books.
And
she's
got
books.
A real scholarship.
She's book smart. She ain't street smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was drowning in lies and backed into a corner and terrified and.
Oh, and, it,
and she was so good at it.
And it gets worse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, She continued forging the report cards and living with Daniel during the week, coming home on the weekend. Her parents bought this lie hook, line, and sinker. As far as they were concerned, Jennifer was a straight-A student at Ryerson University. Daniel had started off at Cardinal Carter Academy.
Cardinal Carter Academy.
Thank you. I leave that stuff in because it's funny.
As you should.
But he got bounced from there for bad grades and the fact that, you know, that he was caught with marijuana. The devil's lettuce.
Yes.
But yeah, he wound up at York University, which was a community college. But still, he's in college at this point, and Jennifer is not. Mm-hmm. This went on for several years. But then it came time to graduate. Bum, bum, bum.
Yep.
So she bought a counterfeit diploma online. But there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Han and Bick would want to come to the graduation ceremony.
Right.
Bum, bum, bum.
So, yeah.
Proud parents.
Yeah, and of course they would. I mean, he had raised Jennifer for this moment. This was it. This is the payoff. Mm-hmm. I'm a great parent. Yay. She's a great daughter. She's a great student. Yes. She's a college graduate that had straight A's all throughout college. Yes. You gotta imagine this guy's on cloud nine. He's probably out, you know, like celebrating with friends with cigars and, you know, non-alcoholic beer. And, and you know, I really feel that now I'm starting to feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Earlier, I felt bad for Jennifer and had a little animosity toward him. Now the roles are reversed.
Yeah, he's like, I'm such a good dad. I really made something of my daughter. It's true.
Oh, he made something.
Yeah, well, he sure did.
He made a murderer.
Yeah.
So the story she came up with, once again, head scratcher. Were her parents as smart as we give them credit for? This is a head scratcher. Like I said, they're book smart too, not street smart. And they also had no clue that their daughter was spinning all this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But the story she came up with was saying that the school was only allocating one ticket, you know, and she didn't want to have to choose which parent would be able to go. So she's like, okay, I don't want either one of you to go because I can't choose. Which sound reasons.
It does
make sense. It doesn't make sense that the college would do that. It does make sense for her saying, I love you both. So if one of you has to stay behind.
Yeah.
But I don't see a college saying like, just like one parent can come. No,
no.
It doesn't work that
way.
If I was me, I'd be like, well, I'm going, and that's me.
Yeah.
Fight
before us. I mean, he even,
you
know, Han even said, Han even said, it's just like, well, you sit in the chair, I'll stand along the back wall.
No.
I was just like, come here, I want to give you a hug, Han.
Yeah, so that's sad. Yeah.
But that just shows how calculated she
that's
was.
That's sad.
And how gullible they were.
For sure.
True.
So,
yep,
so
very
naive.
True.
So naive,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For being super, super smart, they were equally super, super gullible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sad.
And I feel real bad saying that.
But. That's sad. You want to believe what your kids say, though, right?
Yeah.
You don't think the worst. You want to think the best. You want to believe them. I'm guilty of
Especially
that.
Especially, she's not like a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
She's 24
right.
at this time.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, you're an adult.
Mm-hmm.
You're old enough to have your own life, your own family, and yet
that's
choosing
weird.
To make up these elaborate lies. Like what?
Yeah. That's
well,
crazy.
we're gonna get into that, but
sorry.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I mean, you don't have my notes in front of you.
but
she promised lots of pictures and the diploma, and so she can.
That's right.
She's obviously pretty good at Photoshop. Yeah, she's. But
well, she also said too that, she was like, "Oh, sorry, the person that I had take pictures for you, yeah, he left for China, so
that's right. That's right.
So
she had an excuse.
Sorry about that. For
sure. I didn't come across that. That's like wow. Yeah. She's
that's terrible.
For everything.
It's terrible. Yeah.
Well, the guy that was supposed to take pictures, he was the guy that was he was also captain of a freighter, and he was the guy that hit the Baltimore, the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Wait, what? Oh, no. No.
What? Really?
No.
Oh, you had me going. Really?
I'm not cutting that out.
Yeah, you are.
Nope,
yeah, you are.
Not. I got you.
Dun dun dun! Chris is gullible.
She's the blonde.
No, but I was.
I am the blonde. I'm the blonde in our duo. Bam.
But I was no. I was just using a present day event. Mm-hmm. As something that she would use in a lie.
Oh, well, shit. Of course it wouldn't have been her or him. Of course. Edit that out. Edit.
You know what bridge he's talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Baltimore.
It just
it's
happened.
All coming around.
Okay. Yes. That's why our freaking jam is $10, is because that bridge went
all
okay.
Coming back to me now.
Yeah. Hey, another Canadian.
Meatloaf's version is very much superior to Celine Dion.
You're absolutely right. Hey, okay. You got me, because I do love Meatloaf. I love me some Meatloaf. But
have you heard his version of that song? Too. Have you heard his version of that song? Have you heard his version? God, that's it. Yeah, it's so incredible. That song was made for him.
Yeah, I agree. He's very good.
Saw him at
concert. He lost me on Celebrity Apprentice, but
I didn't see that. But whatever. I don't watch that stuff. But no, I saw him. I saw him in concert back in the 90s.
Did you really?
He was great.
Oh,
he had his daughter. He had his daughter up there singing backup vocals. And
really,
yeah, she's the one that married Scotty Inn from Anthrax.
Oh, I'll have to look her up. Okay,
yeah, Pearl.
Okay,
but yeah, that was one of the best shows I've ever been to.
That's awesome.
But anyway, hashtag. But I digress again.
Right.
But the thought that this whole thing about the. Yeah, the one ticket that the fact that it was fishy never even crossed her parents' minds. In an effort to distance herself even further, she told her parents that she had gotten an internship at a hospital further away. This was when Hans started getting suspicious. He wanted to see Jennifer's uniform and her pass key. And Jennifer's in her 20s at this point, and there was only one reason. To have, for her to continue the charade, and that was David.
Well, yeah.
That was the driving factor, in my opinion. It's just like she's obsessed with David. Mm. And
yeah, it was to lie.
Daniel.
Because, well, she was scared, too. Like, she didn't
it's just like. This is the real life embodiment of that thing. It's just like you tell one lie, you have to remember that lie.
100%.
You have to remember the lie after that, and you have to remember every
exactly.
lie you've ever told and everything. Exactly. And this is the living embodiment of that. It really is. Mm-hmm. Because
but yeah,
because
but
she,
for sure. David was a huge component of her life.
For sure,
for sure.
Right.
For sure.
It's because she was obsessed with him, and that we'll get to that shortly. He told her one weekend that he was going to take her to the hospital the following Monday. Yeah, now she's still staying at home on weekends, and Jennifer tried desperately to get out of this, but Han wasn't having it. They got to the parking lot of the hospital, and Jennifer jumped out of the car and ran into the ER. And Bic followed her, but she lost Jennifer inside and couldn't find her. And Jennifer literally stayed in the waiting room, the waiting room for 2 hours, just hiding. And it's just like, Now, remember when I said that her friend Topaz?
Topaz.
This bestie that Jennifer was staying with. And Topaz said that the last time that she had seen Jennifer was when she was still in college. And busted.
Yeah.
But Topaz was in on the whole ruse. But when confronted, she folded like a deck of cards. Yeah, like a losing hand at a poker hand. Jennifer later contacted Bic to have her, to pick her up. And when Bic arrived, she saw Jennifer getting out of a car and kissing a young man. Bomb, bomb, bomb. They got back home and the shit hit the fan and the truth came out. Han was furious. Yeah, and that ultra conservative mindset that these Asian men have, these old school Asian men have, this was a lot more than just his daughter lying to him. This was honor. She had hurt his honor.
Yeah.
And oh man, it's just like this would be like if Godzilla stepped on a 10-foot Lego.
Yeah. For sure.
But he gave Jenner an ultimatum. Stay home, fix things, it's their rules 100%. Or go be with a boyfriend. And she's done, like completely cut off. We're through with you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Forever, like disowned. Yeah, and she decided to come home and make things right. And among the rules, there's no cell phone, no computer unless it was for school, no boyfriends, fix her life or bye-bye. She had to get a job. She applied to retake her high school exam. She got a job, or so she said. In y'all's research, did she get a GED? Yeah, she had to it because she did get into a community college. Yeah, mm-hmm. So she had to.
So eventually she did get her GED and she did get accepted to the college that she was originally applying for.
Ryerson? She said that she had gotten a job at the pharmacy in a local Walmart. Han didn't believe it. He wanted proof. His issue at the time was the fact that she hadn't even gotten a high school diploma at this point. How could she get a job at a pharmacy?
Yeah.
Jennifer came home one day. Han asked her how she, just like, all right, how did you get this job without a degree? And I showed you pay stubs. Yeah, you've seen my pay stubs and everything. And, she also had showed him diplomas and a report card, too. But he then said, show me the money. And as in, pull it up online. Let me see your bank deposits. Mm-hmm. Busted. There was no money. She had been with Daniel while she was supposedly at work. If Han hadn't exploded already, this explosion probably measured on the Richter scale.
For sure.
I mean, he's saying, it's like he said she's no longer allowed to see Daniel ever again, or she had to wait until he was dead if she wanted to see Daniel.
Yeah.
So, but Daniel decided that he couldn't live like this, sneaking around and everything. They're adults, for Christ's sake.
Exactly.
A normal relationship, exactly. Like everybody else. They stayed friends. But Daniel moved on. But once he moved on, Jennifer was scorned, and she claimed to Daniel that a man dressed as a cop came into their house one night, and that he and a couple other men had gang raped her. She said that in the days that followed, somebody had mailed a bullet to her. She didn't report this to the police. Why? Why?
Because it wasn't true.
Exactly. It was her own story.
She just told this to Daniel, and said that it had been orchestrated by Daniel's new girlfriend. So she's loopy at this point. You can make it the case that, that it was because of how oppressively strictly she had been raised, but that excuses nothing.
Right.
You don't accuse somebody of, like, oh, your girlfriend had to be gang raped. Jennifer had gotten her high school diploma at this point and been applying to colleges, and she was accepted into one. She had gotten a job at a restaurant and given piano lessons, and she had regained her parents' trust somewhat. And she had even gotten her phone back, but she's 24 years old at this point. Jennifer and Daniel were back in contact, and they came up with a plan to hire a hitman for $10,000 to kill her parents. And they figured that she would inherit $500,000 from life insurance, and they were going to get a place and be together forever.
Isn't that the dream?
Wow. Romance.
Love. True love.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
My favorite movie.
That's like the only chick. That's like the only chick flick that every man likes.
What? I know, it's true. It's so good. Yeah. It's got everything, man.
So that's a bit of an escalation there. Yeah, just like, hey, nice to see you again, Daniel. I'm glad you got rid of that bitch, but let's kill my parents. And that was bitch. I meant to say bitch there. I wasn't talking about her mother.
You were referring to Dick.
I wasn't talking about the lighter. I wasn't talking about Jennifer's mother. But
no.
Daniel connected Jennifer with Linford Roy Crawford, a Jamaican man who went by Homeboy. Because I'm a Jamaican boy. I'm sorry.
Jamaican.
God,
boy.
That just popped in my head.
Oh,
God,
no.
Damn it.
No. I saw that too many times in, like, what would you say? Like, maybe 2 weeks?
Yeah.
On our boys for like 2 weeks.
Videos of it.
Obsessed.
Yes.
Obsessed.
True story. I was in Miami. Because I go to Miami a lot with my job and everything. I was driving down the turnpike, came across this accident and everything. It was on the shoulder. There was no traffic pileup or anything. But one of those two island boys was involved in the accident. And I saw him standing on the stand. Yeah.
No.
No
way.
Yes. My kids would die for that video. Do you have like a dash cam?
If I had thought about it, it wouldn't have been pointed to the shoulder anyway. So, but I'm just like, I was just
shoot.
Like, I mean, you're island boy, yeah. And I can't drive.
Island boy, sweet red wine,
so bad. Oh, that's funny.
Man. Oh, man. But I don't know who was at fault or whatever. But yeah, there was an island boy on the
That's an awesome story, though.
I'm so glad their 15 minutes are up. God, if they had gotten famous
totally.
And just like hit it like really big.
I know.
Yeah, I'm
that would be disappointing. I'm a Florida man. Video is disappointing.
But I think I speak for all Floridians when I say we don't claim those two.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fair. Okay. There's some that we want to throw away too.
Like Jennifer Penn.
She would be one of them, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway,
there you go.
Hashtag, but I digress. I'm having fun, though. I'm having fun. And listeners, I hope you're having fun, you know, like listening to this, because we are having a blast here.
I hope so.
So anyway, Daniel gave Jennifer a cell phone so that they could communicate via text, and nothing would show up on her main cell phone. Crawford then contacted Eric Carty, who went by Sniper, who brought in David Mill, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. You pronounce it right on your episode.
Oh, well, shit.
David Mill.
It wasn't me.
Hold on. I'll find it.
Is it French?
No.
Polish.
It's M-Y-L and about 30 other letters. No, there are vowels in it, but
no,
you're putting that on the spot. Hold on.
Well, we'll just continue because his name comes up again, and I don't try to pronounce it again. So, November 8, 2010, Han returned home from work. He changed, he got ready for bed, and he settled in. With his laptop and everything. He's just chilling out before he goes to bed. He goes to sleep. Jennifer had a friend over to watch TV. Bic went out to her dancing class. It's 8 p.m. at this point. Han then goes, turns in for the night. Jennifer's friend leaves, and then Jennifer pulled out her regular phone and called another friend. Around 10 p.m., Bic returned home. She got ready for bed, and Han was asleep. Jennifer was on the phone with a friend, and around 10:15, three intruders entered the house. One of them went after Bic, who was still downstairs at this point. The other two went upstairs. Han woke up when he felt one of them press a gun against his forehead. The intruder asked him, "Where's the money?" Jennifer said that that's when she opened the door to her room, and there was a black man standing there pointing a gun at her. He also demanded money. Han and Bic were crowded to the living room. Jennifer was taken throughout the house to show them where the safe and the valuables were. They got around $2,000 cash, despite Han saying that he had less than $100 in the house. But none of the valuables were taken. Han and Bic were then taken down to the basement and blinded with blankets over their head. Jennifer was tied to the banister on the staircase, sitting down with her hands behind her back. Han and Bic were both shot. The intruders then left. Han was shot twice in the head, once through one of his eyes. Jesus Christ. Bic was shot three times in the shoulder and neck, and execution style on the back of her head. Once Jennifer was sure that the intruders were gone, she managed to get the phone from her back pocket and dial 911.
Are you, ma'am? No, I have a choice. Please just don't show me. I don't care if my parents are.
Ma'am, calm down.
Some people broke into our house. Can you show us all his money?
Ma'am, where are you? What?
Avenue
Road.
Yes.
You spell the Virginia for me, please?
Dad?
I got questions.
Yeah.
That
Yeah.
That sounds like she's talking 100%. Directly into the mouthpiece of the phone. You know, not on a speakerphone.
Oh, yeah.
And and how does she dial the 911? How does she dial the right number? This is 2010.
Okay. So I did see this on an episode of something. I do remember them. I did see a video of them making her. They did handcuff her. Oh yeah,
and she was able to do it.
Yeah.
Yep. And she recreated it. Yeah, and she was able to do it. Which, I mean, at first I was like, oh, it couldn't have been her, but then. Or it was her, and then when she did do it with the handcuffs on, and it was
plausible.
So, for sure.
Yeah, but this is 2010 though, and all the 20-somethings had flat screen smartphones by then. You know, she wouldn't have been able to feel around for buttons like you would on a flip phone. You know, and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the police would have had the same thoughts, and although they believed her on the night of the murder, it was on that phone call when Jennifer realized that her father was still alive, and you can hear him in the background, and he managed to make it outside to try and flag help, you know, flag down some help, and
right.
But like I like to say here on this podcast, put a knife in that.
I say that
instead of put a pin in that. This is a true crime podcast. I say put a knife in that.
Yeah, that's a good thing to say. It's true. I mean, make sure it's done. It is rough to hear. I mean, she's definitely surprised in the call for sure.
But.
Yeah, you know, right.
I like to build suspense when I tell a story. So
okay, let's build suspense.
The dispatcher sent every officer available to the house as well as an ambulance, and when they arrived, they untied Jennifer, and they had found Bick deceased on the floor, and the house was in disarray. And Jennifer was taken to the police station to make a statement, where she told police the version that I just told you. Like y'all said, police asked her to demonstrate how she was able to get her phone out of her back pocket, which she did demonstrate. And that satisfied their curiosity, or at least they made it seem like it did. You know, that's just my thoughts. It's just like I think they still got questions.
Right.
They're not just like okay, but still, that does. Like I said, she's handcuffed with her hands around the back. This is a flat screen cell phone. This isn't like where you can just like feel around to it. It's like, okay, here's 1, 2, and 3, 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, 9, and I can feel it. Yeah.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I see what you mean.
I mean, but that's just, I'm just a, I'm just speculating. I'm a podcaster. I'm not a criminologist.
Yeah.
But.
Well.
Han was alive, but barely. He was immediately taken into surgery, and he was put into a medically induced coma. And you know that Jennifer's sweating at this point. Because if he wakes up and remembers everything, Jennifer's screwed, depending on what she had told the police. And she had to make sure that it matched what was on the 911 call. There was very little physical evidence at the scene, so police had the work cut out for him. And at this point, they're believing Jennifer's story. And believing it, but something don't feel right. That's just me speculating once again.
For sure.
There's very little physical evidence, and I already said that. The next day, Jennifer was taken to the hospital to see Han, who was still in the medically induced coma. Next day, Han woke up, and police were there to question him, and he remembered the man demanding the money, then being forced out of the bedroom, He then said that one of the gunmen was talking to Jennifer like they knew each other. He also suggested that they talk to Jennifer's boyfriend, Daniel Wong.
Oh, and there you go.
One thing I think is funny about the, not really funny, but it's just, you know, Han hates Daniel. It, like, almost irrationally hates Daniel.
For sure, for sure. For sure.
No.
There's no reason for it, really.
Yeah.
It's just a boyfriend.
But Danny was brought in for questioning, and he told him all about Jennifer's lies. He threw her under the bus. And he also said that how they had kept their relationship a secret for years. It's like, you know, he told all about the lies about college and, you know, forging diplomas and all that stuff. They brought Jennifer back in for a second interview and dug deeper, asking more pointed questions. Jennifer began telling the police all about the problems she had with her parents, how tyrannical Han was, how they weren't even close. But the details that she had said in the initial interview differed from what she was saying this time. She was starting to break down, saying that it was like living in a prison, which it probably was, but that doesn't give her justification for Moida.
Right.
Police searched the house again. They found a cell phone. The phone that they found was registered to Daniel. They searched this phone and figured out who the last five people who had called Jennifer were. One of the people was David M-Y-L, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name.
Okay.
You got it?
Chris.
You got it, Chris?
By the name.
No.
I can't find it. It's got to be in here somewhere. I can't find it either.
But police knew this guy. David M-Y-L, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce the last name. But he wasn't exactly a model citizen. They brought him in, and his phone linked up to Linford Crawford and to Eric Carty. These two were also known and had records. These three, according to the cell records, had been in like triangulation with cell towers and everything. They had been in Markham the night of the murder. None of them lived there. Ah, oh, man. This reminds me of our Sandy Razzo case. Another one you can listen to. Cell phone towers.
Oh
yeah,
that's the best.
So great.
I like
it's just like
ones.
Okay, you could have the perfect plan, but if you got your cell phone with you, you're fucked.
Dude, like, come on. By now, do you not know to just shut your friggin' phone off?
Yeah.
If you don't, you're asking to get caught.
Yep.
So end of story.
Yeah.
Also, cameras everywhere.
So the police began piecing it together through Daniel. Yeah, they determined that they figured that Jennifer had hired a gang to kill her parents. Finally, in her third interview, a detective, after getting Jennifer emotional, told her parents. Here we go. After getting Jennifer emotional, told her that everything pointed to her hiring those guys to kill her parents. She broke down and said, this wasn't supposed to happen that way. She did hire him. She did hire these guys. But they were supposed to kill her, not her parents.
Yeah, okay. This is where the story lost me when Chris was telling it too. It made me laugh because that just doesn't.
Yeah,
make
if
any
you
want to
off yourself, just off yourself. I mean, I'm not saying off yourself, but if you're gonna
exactly.
do it, don't involve anybody else. Just do it. You know.
Exactly, and I found David's name.
Good luck.
David Milvaginim.
Woohoo! Now say it like you mean it.
Milvaginim.
There you go.
Milvaginim.
So if
David
I
Milvaginim. And that's the last time I'll say it.
Damn it, I was going to ask you to say it again if it comes up again.
I'm half through a bottle of wine, so I'm not going to say it one more time.
That rhymed.
Almost. Continue, please.
But it was just so bad living there. It's one of my favorite collabs.
Just so we know who he is.
It's one of my
just
favorite so collabs that I've done.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
It was so bad living there. She just wanted to die. But she had canceled it, though. Why? Do you want to take this? This is even funnier. You don't know why? She canceled it. She called off the hit on herself. Why?
What?
Well,
she called off. They were supposed to come there to kill her, not her parents. But she had canceled. Mm-hmm. She had canceled the hit on herself. Mm-hmm. But the men wanted a cancellation fee, and when she couldn't come up with it, they came in anyway and shot her parents in retaliation for her not having the cancellation fee.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh my God, that's horrible.
I mean, this story just gets that's more horrible. And more insane. I mean,
yeah, it's just
yeah,
so bad.
It's just like I am laughing at her because she's a criminal. She put a hit on her parents, mm-hmm. resulting in the crippling of one of her parents and, you know, the death of the other one. But the way she just keeps digging and digging and digging, and it just gets more and more insane. It's just
it's a disaster for sure.
It's a clusterfuck. But Jennifer was then put under arrest after the third interview. Daniel, Linford Crawford, Eric Carty, and David.
Oh shoot!
This.
Well, now I can't remember. David Milvaginim.
Milf spanking him.
I think I just broke Chris.
I think I just broke her.
And David Milvaginim. No? I think so. Milvaginim.
I broke Chris.
Yes, it is. It's David Milvaginim. No,
I had some. I had another zinger like building, but
I'm sounding it out.
Oh,
oh! My phone fell. Milvaginim, David Milvaginim.
Chris, sorry, not sorry for breaking you on that one.
That's okay. That's all right.
This is CKCB. But yeah, David was also arrested. The trial began on March 19, 2014, and there was a media circus waiting. And the first day, the 911 call was played, and you know Jennifer played her part well until she heard, you know, this is on the call. Jennifer played her part well. She's actually doing very well until she heard Hans in the background start yelling. At that point, she became more frantic and panicky. I mean, you'd think that she would have been happy. You know, her dad's alive. But, and this tidbit was not lost on, you know, on the jury. They also showed the text messages between Jennifer and Daniel hours before the shooting leading up to it. There were over 100. The fact that the killers not only didn't take her down to the basement, they left a witness and a victim alive. This didn't make sense. Han even took the stand, and his version greatly differed from Jennifer's. The fact that Han was implicating his own daughter wasn't lost on anybody either. Jennifer was proven to have been obsessed with Daniel, and that just made her look even worse. The prosecution painted Jennifer as seeking to do away with what stood between her and Daniel, her parents. It came out that a classmate, Ricardo Duncan, who Jennifer says she paid $1,500 to kill her father, had taken the money and ran. This...
$1,500.
Huh?
$1,500?
Yeah, $1,500. Yeah, but wow. He pocketed the money. He was just like, what are you going to do, report me to the police? Hello, officer. I paid this guy $1,500 to kill my parents, but he took the money and he ran. I want him arrested. But the way the wheels are falling off of her, her story and everything, if she actually had said that, it wouldn't have surprised me.
True.
But after that, that's when she had approached Daniel about it. And Daniel, as a weed dealer, he had connections, and he initially said no, but she worked him down and convinced him to do it. You know, likely to the tune of $500,000 in life insurance money. Daniel was the one that put her in contact with the three hitmen, like I said before.
Yeah.
Now, this is what the prosecution put together. That night, Han was asleep, Bick was at dancing class, Jennifer was texting on a phone, she was texting a phone that was in a car heading east, then north. This was taking the car closer to their house. David, take it, Jess. David? Sure. David Miller, I'm not even going to try.
Oh! David Milvaganen.
There you go. He had called Jennifer twice, letting her know that they were en route. Bick had arrived back home, by that time, and after she got home, Jennifer unlocked the front door. She flashed the lights on the porch, and that let the men know that she was ready. You know, the home invasion part of it was to cover, was just cover to make it look like a robbery, rather than a hit. Like a robbery gone bad rather than a hit. Jennifer then paid the men, told them to tie her to the banister. The men left, then she called 911. It was the phone records, for one thing, getting tongue-tied here. I always get tongue-tied. It was the phone records, for one thing. Sometimes I can't read my own writing even when I typed it. and it was the phone records. For one thing, between the criminals involved, Daniel and the other three, somebody should have thought to use burner phones.
For sure.
I mean, Breaking Bad hadn't been released yet at this point, I don't think, but still. Use a burner phone. Go to Walmart, get yourself a track phone.
For sure.
Track phone.
Yep. Do some research.
Killers.
Watch them.
The first choice of killers everywhere.
First 48. Yeah.
The jury deliberated for 4 days and came back with a verdict. All five were guilty on all counts. The sentence was life with no parole for 25 years for four of them, but Eric Canty was sentenced to 18 years. So, but that makes the four eligible in 2035. Three jurors were crying at the end because they felt that Jennifer wasn't a bad person. She just made a bad decision. And to that, I say her bad decision made her a bad person.
Exactly.
She chose.
She needs to be punished.
She chose her obsession on Daniel over her parents. Daniel went through with it over money. That makes him a bad person. Remember, he had said initially that Jennifer, hold on. Remember, he had said no initially, and then Jennifer waved the insurance money in his face, so he went along with it. So, yeah, he's a bad person too.
Right.
If there was anybody who could have stopped this in its tracks, it was Daniel, and he didn't.
True.
Because without Daniel, none of this happens. Because she doesn't have contacts. She doesn't have a way to get in touch with these people.
True.
In May of last year, a judge granted an appeal, and the charges were reduced to second degree from first degree, but the sentences remained the same. Like guess what? You're still not getting out until 2035, but it's second degree instead of first degree. So, you might be able to find a better job when you get out.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're eligible for parole in 2035. And honestly, I'd be okay with them being released if they're deemed not to be dangerous to society, as in, like, if they actually were rehabilitated. These people...
I mean, it was to get rid of Jennifer's parents. I don't think they're just going around killing anybody they see.
No.
I
mean, Carla Homolka's free.
Yeah. And I know you didn't want to cover that one.
No, I have plans for that one.
Okay.
I have plans for that one.
Yeah. That's rough, yeah.
I have some extra stuff planned for that one.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, I look forward to it, because that's a rough one. I wouldn't know where to start with that. Yeah, I mean, it's not like a serial killer. They're not going around just shooting people for the fun of it or anything like that. Like, those people for sure locked up forever. Somebody like this, I get it. It was somebody that was kind of just in the way. She was an angry, I don't want to say teen, but I guess it started as a teen.
Well, she was probably mentally a teenager.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Do you think she should have gotten more time? Or, like,
More than 25 years. In Canada, you can't get more.
Well, so life is 25. Right.
Right.
Which sucks for a lot of people, like, for sure. There are some people that should be in there forever.
Willie Pickton.
I don't know. Me and...
No, wait. Carla Homolka is free. But what about Bernardo? Is he free?
No.
So he's one that's been there longer than 25 years. Mm-hmm. So...
So I think it's up for parole in 25 years, right. Is it not?
Yeah. So Bernardo is, you know... They're like, you ain't getting out of here, you asshole.
No. Although, like, I don't know, like, I mean, I guess you don't know until you know really what she went through with him. But for her to give up her own sister, that's what I always think of in my head.
But
the thing about it is,
and this is, you know, it's like, I look at both sides on these. You know, sometimes especially when there's somebody, you know, we're getting off track here, but that's fine. I look at both sides of it. Carla Homolka, if there had been no Paul Bernardo, Carla Homolka doesn't kill anybody.
That's right. True. Well, I mean, she could have found someone else, but yeah.
No, but I think it was all Paul, honestly. I mean, do I think that it's cool?
No, it's true.
Do I think that it's cool that she's... Yeah, should she have gotten a longer sentence? Sure. Maybe been denied parole like a few times. Do I think that she should have gotten out eventually? Yeah, not as soon as she did, but eventually, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them. It's just like they paid their debt to society. They did what society required of them, and they haven't reoffended.
Yeah.
So it's just, and that's what the justice system is there for. And I think the same thing applies to maybe not the three gang members that they hired. Maybe not even Daniel, but Jennifer.
Yeah.
I think at some point, yeah, let her out.
I think it's tough thinking about her sister. I feel really bad for her young sister, but I definitely get what you're saying, for sure.
About Jennifer?
About Carla?
No, I moved back to Jennifer. I said at some point Jennifer should probably get out.
Okay.
Maybe Daniel, maybe 10 years later. The other three guys, maybe not, because they were actually the ones that carried out the actual murder. So,
yeah, I don't know. I know that's tough. It's tough.
I think that if you are convicted of something, you go to prison, you do your time, and you're released. Guess what? You've done what was required of you. And as long as you don't revert back to your previous transgressions, more power to you. You know, I mean, it's just...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
Like to think that if I just, you know, flew off the handle sometime and just, like, killed somebody, and I went to prison, and then I, and then I was, no, this isn't a confession. It's hypothetical.
That would be amazing.
But
that would be amazing.
Yeah. No, but
I would love to fly off the handle and then just.
I'm sentenced for 15, 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And more likely if I was in Canada. If in the United States, I'm more than likely going away for life. Like, meaning I'm dying.
You don't want to be in Texas. No.
But still, it's just like, I'd like to think that if after I did the time that I was sentenced to, I'm good, right? I mean,
because if that isn't the case,
what's the point of even setting a parole date?
You know? So that's the thing. In Jennifer Pan's case, of course, like, she probably would never want to kill anybody else, right? Like, her parents, she felt, were in the way of her life, the life that she wanted. So I get it. She served her time. She's out. She's probably never going to kill anybody again. That's fine. Obviously,
well,
there's others.
She's got 11 years to go before she's even eligible for parole.
Right.
But anyway, I like discussing the uncomfortable side of this too. Yeah, it's just like, okay, what do you think about that? What do you think about a killer getting out? Well. Unless it's something like my last episode.
Okay.
Anyway.
No, I feel the same. Like I've said to Chris before, you know, I come from a family who can debate, you know, disagree till the bitter end. But it's just a conversation, right? I'm cool with it. I do like talking about things like that. I'm comfortable with that. I like it.
All right, so let's wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. Han said that when his wife died, he felt like he had died as well, and that Jennifer was dead to him. And you know what? I totally get that too.
Yep.
And also, I thought I put this in my notes, but I didn't. Jennifer actually organized the, you know, it was an honor thing. Jennifer actually organized Bick's funeral.
Really,
It was something, you know, like Asian tradition or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought I had put it in here. I guess I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, it
okay.
was something. It's just like, God, I'm not even going to try to remember it because I don't. I thought I had put it in my notes.
No, that's
but I guess
okay.
I didn't.
But no.
No, but Jennifer. Yeah, it was a honor tradition that let's see I think I remember, and don't come at me if I'm wrong because I'm trying to remember. I thought I had it in my notes, but I didn't. Basically, like in this honor tradition and everything that they followed, if a child, you know, if a parent dies, when a parent dies, the child has to arrange the funeral, I think was the gist of it. And so she was allowed to arrange the funeral for Bick, even though she had Bick killed. But yeah, you know, she obviously wasn't at the funeral, but she did arrange it as far as like the tradition or whatever.
Okay.
But here's another thought. Let's say that they did get away with this. Let's say that they carried it out. Both parents were dead, and you know, and they got away with it. What happens later on if because Jennifer had the thought in the first place, what happens later on if Daniel pisses her off?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And I'm sure you've seen cases similar, right? Where they kill one husband, they kill husband number two, they just keep going, right?
Yeah. I think that because she's in prison, it doesn't happen. You know, once she gets released, it doesn't happen. But if they had gotten away with it, she could have turned into a serial killer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you're right about that for sure.
But that's rehabilitation though. Because if she gets released, she's not gonna do it again.
Yeah, kinda scares her. Yeah, true. But no, I agree with you for sure. If she got away with it, she could have, you know, could think maybe I'll get away with it again and kill her husband, kill a second husband. Who knows? You're right. For sure. I agree with that.
Yeah, that's just a, you know, speculation or whatever. But, but wrapping it up, I have one more thing. When Jennifer was first arrested and charged, she actually asked the police officers, "But what happens to me?" Well, Jennifer, you fucked around and you found out, didn't you?
You fucked around and you found out. Oh, man.
So anyway.
She sure did.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Jennifer Pan. Yeah, this is the
Jennifer Pan
extra episode in the Canada binge, bringing the total to 5. And who knows, we might keep going. We might keep going with Canada.
I hope so.
I mean that freaking cult that I came across. Good God, that's a rough one. But I'm still not over that one.
I'm excited to listen for sure.
But
Chris and I are listening tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate the hell out of it. This was a fun collaboration. Like I said earlier, I think this is the,
I agree.
I think I had the fun. I think this is my favorite collaboration so far, you know, so far, because we had a blast.
So awesome.
So, but.
Well, it was our first.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Best so far, of course.
So, anyway, follow us on the socials. All that stuff's linked in there. Like, subscribe, review, comment. You know, comment on Apple, comment on YouTube. And definitely check out Moms, Wine, and True Crime. And their socials are what? Let us know. Tell us.
So our email is momswineandtruecrime@outlook.com. And Moms, Wine, and True Crime on Facebook and Instagram. And listen to us anywhere you get your podcast.
Same thing with ours.
And yours. Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer.
Yummy.
CKCB.
So.
Collab.
Hell yeah. So, hope you enjoyed this
episode. Oh, yeah.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. We sure as hell did. And get ready, because next week it's Willie Picton. And part one. And I'm not even going to try and say it might be multiple. No, it's going to be multiple parts. So.
Looking forward to it.
So, yeah. Until next week. Later.
Later.